Hello, my friends. Today we are talking to James Lloyd, the co-founder and CTO at Redox, and we discuss the advantages of reasoning from first principles, surrounding yourself with people who are passionate about overcoming challenges and understanding the problem before you work on the solution. All of this right here, right now on the Modern CTO Podcast.
Here we go.
This is the Modern CTO Podcast.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Joel. How's it going?
Fantastic. How are you, man?
Doing great.
So you're in Denver today?
I am. You're seeing the inside of my Airbnb while I try to find a house.
Oh, nice. So you just moved to Denver then?
Yeah. I just moved here kind of permanently about a month ago. So
nice. Do you have an office there?
Yeah, we do. We have a little co-working space kind of thing. There's a building that they just built that's all healthcare IT, and about 7 floors of all healthcare technology companies. And we have a little space in there. So it's good company and good community there. So.
Nice. So my wife actually just applied to vet school out there. She applied to Boston and then out in like Denver. So I might end up being in Denver in a year or so.
Awesome. Yeah, it's lovely here. Very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, the weather is really nice and the atmosphere is good. It's got a young, cool vibe. And I'm a fan. I like it a lot out there.
Yeah.
Well, your team's mostly remote?
Yeah. We are distributed across the US. So we just crossed the 100 employee mark. And
ooh.
Yeah, pretty exciting. So we've got, got people in every time zone due to the kind of nature of what we do with healthcare. We are kind of limited to only hiring inside the US. There's some interesting restrictions around, working outside the US and having any sort of patient data cross borders and everything like that. So, We're kind of US only, but yeah, we've got people in pretty much every major city and all the time zones and everything like that.
Well, that's really exciting. So sales, everything's distributed?
Yep. I think we have six kind of small offices. If we coincidentally get a handful of people in a certain city, we'll help fund a little co-working space or a place to have kind of social events. But we've got people in pretty much every city, and our co-working spaces and kind of small offices are in Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, Denver, Chicago, Austin, and Madison.
All the cool places.
Yeah.
All the popular tech places. So was it intentional? Like at the beginning when you were coming up with this idea of growing this company, were you like, I want to be remote, or did it just happen naturally? How did that come about?
It was a little bit of both. Yeah. So it was definitely, so a lot of the early employees, including myself and the other two co-founders, all worked at this company, a large healthcare technology company called Epic. And, they were definitely, the opposite of remote. You know, they basically had their one headquarters. Everybody had to live nearby. And, because of that, we kind of saw a lot of people who were really great coworkers who loved their jobs, but had to quit because their spouse got, got into veterinary school in a different state or something like that.
Right.
So we kind of saw that and saw that as kind of disappointing and almost unnecessary due to, technology that existed. And then the other factor was whenever we first got started, we kind of knew a little bit about the team we wanted to build out in terms of who we wanted on it and what type of people. And as we kind of went through our network and tried to find those people, they weren't nearby us. Right. And so, our first five employees were not in Wisconsin where we were. And we just kind of rolled with it from day one, actually. So,
Nice. So I like your story because we did get a chance. Rarely do I get to talk to a guest before we have them on the show. So we had an awesome call last month and you told me about how the company got started out of like this incubator startup thing. Can you elaborate on how you went from that to taking over the world?
We're not quite there yet, but like I mentioned, so me and the two other co-founders of Redox were at, we all three of us worked at a company called Epic, which is a large electronic medical record software company. And me and one of the other co-founders, Nico, we both left there kind of wanting to explore something a little bit more entrepreneurial. The company, I was there for 5 years. Company had grown from about 1,500 employees to about 8,000 employees in those 5 years. And the dynamic had totally shifted. And yeah, it was just time to explore kind of what I could do on my own. And during that period, we were kind of exploring, like, what are the other entrepreneurs doing? Where are like the role models in Madison? And you know, we didn't really find too many people. They had all kind of moved off to San Francisco or Boston or all the other kind of tech hubs. And at that point in time, we had really fallen in love with Madison and wanted to stay there. And so the first thing we did was work with a few other folks to set up basically a co-working space as basically a halfway house. There was a lot of people that come to the city, to Madison, for either the university or to work at Epic, or the state capitals there too. And there's just a lot of people who do kind of a 2 to 4 year stint for whatever brought them there, and then they leave. So we were hoping that, you know, our hypothesis was, if we make a cool place that's a strong community, then people will have these kind of serendipitous interactions and something cool will form out of it. And for the most part, that hypothesis kind of proved out. So we started the co-working space, got a bunch of really cool people in there, and a lot of companies were getting formed, and we set it up as a nonprofit. So everybody who was a member of the co-working space also gave back to other nonprofits and kind of community organizations across the city. Because of that, we could keep it really cheap. So we got lots of really good members in. And at any rate, we started to see these people coming in with, you know, PhD in computer science, and their project that they were going to try to tackle was like making the next Instagram or something kind of flimsy, or like people with like 10 years of hospital billing experience from the healthcare space and trying to get into social media or something like that too. And it was cool. Like it was fun to watch them explore those opportunities. But just over time, we saw a lot of kind of underutilized skill sets that we thought we could help bring out if we started an incubator inside of the co-working space. So we started a healthcare technology targeted incubator. And at that point, Nico and I started working with our third co-founder, Luke, at that point. And so we started about 8 or 9 companies through that process, just kind of finding co-founders or finding kind of the subject matter expert to build the company around. And Nico or Luke or I would kind of augment their team however they needed help. And so through starting all those companies, we learned a lot about kind of the space and different kind of sectors within healthcare and a lot of the challenges that new companies face when they're getting started in healthcare. And kind of behind the scenes. So being the CTO for an incubator is kind of not a real job. And so what I was doing mostly was building websites for people and then building some tools on the back end that I thought could be shared across the portfolio companies we were starting. And so one of those tools was this kind of lightweight API that any of these companies we were starting could use to interact with, to exchange medical record information with health systems that they may be partnering with. And so as we were trying to figure out how we could fund ourselves as an incubator, we never really figured out the financial model. We just felt like it was the right thing to do and kind of hoped that we'd figure something out as we were going through the process. And as we were going through that process of trying to like raise money to be an incubator, we realized that the financial model really wasn't there, but all the folks who were trying to get investment from kept pushing us to be a product company. They were like, you guys have everything you need. Like, why don't you just start a product company? And, as we kind of got that message for about the like fifth or sixth time, we were like, okay, maybe these guys are right. We started to look around at, you know, should we get involved with one of the companies we've started, or is there something else we could do? And around about that time, we started talking about this kind of platform that we were working on in the background, and sort of shopped it out to a bunch of other startups, some more medium-sized health tech companies, and kind of proposed this idea of, you know, single API, highly scalable. You can go to any health system with it, and any web developer can interact with it. You don't need any sort of healthcare background to use it, and kind of send out that that email to I think about 50 people, and we got about 40 yeses back in like the next 3 days. And so we're like, nice. Okay, I think this is a pretty clear decision, pretty clear like product market fit from sort of day one. So that was kind of how we first got started into Redox, was through the incubator and through building that kind of shared tooling framework for the companies we were starting.
Nice. So I was checking out the values, right? So Redox is the company, that's the name. Like, that's what you ultimately called this company that is this API, this like single point electronic medical record API. And you have some really cool values, right? Being authentic. Number two on my list, at least the list I have, reason from first principles. This is a personal favorite of mine.
Cool.
Because I first heard it come from Elon Musk. Mm-hmm. And when I did, I literally have a recurring event in my phone that fires off every 3 months. And it says, revisit think first principles, because it's just something that as a human I never want to forget, because it's such good information. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, I think it comes a little bit more naturally, perhaps, because unlike maybe most folks you have on here, I don't have like a traditional CS background. I came up through math and physics, and in physics this is kind of at the core of a lot of what physics kind of training teaches you is, to break everything apart into axioms and to try to challenge things at the extremes and really try to understand what the kind of fundamental bits of whatever it is you're working on really is. So, the way it manifests in the company is really to give us a way to kind of ask the question of like, do you understand the problem well enough before you start working on the solution? And if you can't kind of answer why until you get to some sort of fundamental understanding of either the customer or the industry or something like that, then you can probably ask yourself why a few more times. And that's how it kind of manifests in the company. And yeah, it's been it's been a useful value for us for sure.
How did you come up with these? Were you all sitting around one day and you're like, we need this list? Or like, what was the moment in time that this list was created?
I will say so the company is about 5 years old. I believe this list is probably the third iteration. The first one was basically pretty quickly done. And then we kind of iterated as we grew as a company. It was mostly a collaboration between me and Nico and Luke, the three co-founders. And it was basically one weekend we just kind of spent and dedicated towards coming up with this. And we went through a bunch of different drafts and everything like that, and wordsmithing and everything like that. But it was sort of an intent of trying to define sort of who we wanted to be and what kind of people we wanted to, what kind of activities we wanted to promote and support and that kind of thing. Yeah.
I like that it's alive, that it's something you continuously revisit, you change, you make sure that like, this is who we are and this is what we like to do. I like that you keep them alive. Now, I do have some questions from the audience. So we email us, ask questions through intercom chat, things like that. And so one of the questions is about viewing problems through the eyes of an entrepreneur. So as your company scales, as you go from 100 to 100,000, more and more people are asking, how do we get our team members, our other people at our company to take ownership, like not to just band-aid the problem, but like to use common sense and figure out, like think like an entrepreneur. Like how will you and Nico and your other co-founder, like how do you spread that throughout your teams?
Yeah. I don't know if I have a silver bullet to go from 100 to 100,000 yet, but I think, the way that we've tried to instill this is really through just getting involved and promoting and supporting people who are doing this kind of work and kind of shining a light on it. I think one thing that we do that's sort of related to our values, this will get back around to the answer in a second, but we have what we call redoxiness, which are a set of traits that we look for during the hiring process. And It's basically like a combination of five attributes that basically missing one is a disqualifier for the hiring process, basically. And they are humble, hungry, people smart, adaptable, and understands why. And so we have a big kind of repository of questions that we ask to try to understand that. But for the most part, that kind of combination of being really hungry and ambitious while still being not very ego driven and being very mission driven and humble is really a combination of people who tend to want to take on more and want to really look outside of their specific job description and really see how they can solve the biggest problem. And so I think through that process, we finding people who are interested in just taking on something a little outside of their job is pretty, I don't want to say easy, but there are plenty of those people within the company. And so we just, for me, I think it's about supporting and helping give those folks recognition whenever that happens, and that helps spread it across the company.
Yeah. So you take care of it early on, right? Mm-hmm. You say, these are the qualifiers, like for our tribe, this is what we look for in people. And so, that's always an interesting thing, because when I hear the large companies that have like the 10,000 people talk about digital transformation, they have a whole different set of problems, because they have hired in ridiculously large numbers of people that don't align with what they want. And then they have to figure out how to transform, right? Which is really tough. But I am curious, like on a personal note, so you oversee, like you have your two co-founders and you primarily focus on product.
Yeah. So, I guess org chart wise, we don't really normally talk about this. So, and then it's quite this way, but, so I work with our engineering team, our product team, our security team. And, as of, I guess this year, our strategy team as well. I kind of head up. So in healthcare, there's lots of, it may not be a normal functional team for many companies, but for us, there's a lot of regulatory stuff. And just as a developer platform, staying ahead of trends and catching waves of what's coming next and doing that kind of market research is really important. So that's kind of what our strategy team does. But so that's sort of who I work with most.
So then your other two co-founders, who oversees sales?
Yeah, so basically the three co-founders. So Nico is he's definitely sort of the face and the heart of the company, but he's very sort of external and does a lot of kind of meeting with people and spends a lot of time out in the community. And then in terms of sort of management of the company, that's sort of split evenly between me and Luke. And so I take kind of the technical teams and he takes a lot of the kind of business development teams. So marketing, sales, operations, finance, looks like that.
Nice. So the reason why I'm curious about this is because like recently we have a startup over here, right? Mm-hmm. That came out of the podcast and like leadership training company, but I was overseeing like everything and just like spread way too thin. And so recently I brought in someone to like oversee sales and marketing. And like the last 3 weeks of my life, I've been so amazing because like working on product and like content, like I'm spending my time in the areas where I'm really strong. Mm-hmm. And that is like such a better feeling than spending the time in the areas where like I was trying to learn sales. Like I'd never done sales before. I built out a sales team. It was very difficult. But the reason why I bring this up and I'm talking about it is like, have you ever found yourself in that position where you're spending a lot of time on something like you're really not good at and you realize that you have to apply your strengths elsewhere? Has that happened to you yet?
Yeah, for sure. I think I really enjoy the process of being forced to learn something new. But I think the skill that I've had to fail at to then know that I needed it is kind of when to kind of get off the treadmill. Like when you stop learning and you're just doing the activity that's kind of way outside of what you should be doing, and knowing when the right time to kind of step away from that is. So early on, we were going from about 10 to about 30 employees. That growth was sort of all on my teams. And so I was basically doing like full-time HR and recruiting and interviewing and stuff like that, which was And I'd done a few interviews before and things like that, but that was definitely at a scale that I hadn't really dealt with before. And yeah, I think that was probably the one that comes to mind the most of just sort of getting into a spot of being focused on something that was totally outside of my normal domain. But it was cool though. We developed a lot of process that the company still has today around hiring and yeah, it was fun to learn, and it was also fun to be able to step away from that whenever. Yeah,
it's fun to learn, and it's fun to delegate.
Yeah.
So did you end up getting an HR person yet? Because I mean, you're about right around 100 people, so usually that's the only time to do that.
So the trajectory of that was actually pretty cool. When we first started, the company itself was just really just kind of like engineering and sales. Like, we didn't really differentiate marketing and sales. We didn't really differentiate product and engineering. It was really just sort of two teams. And within the engineering team, I was trying to basically establish that we should have somebody in charge of like tech management, somebody in charge of like people management, and somebody in charge of like product management. And that kind of played out really well. And the person who was in charge of the people management of the engineering team is now our company-wide VP of people operations. And so he's
Sort
of moved out of engineering into a kind of a company-wide role. And now we have a team of 5 people who do talent acquisition as well. So like full-time recruiters. So yeah, we've definitely grown that team, but it's really fun to have somebody who is comes from an engineering background and a very kind of thoughtful systems type thinker, working in the people ops domain. So, it's fun to be able to talk about like, how would our company work if we were all microservices? And you know, things like that. We get to kind of explore some of those areas of really embracing that. I don't know if you know Conway's law, but it's basically that the structure of the organization, will inevitably directly mirror the structure of the technical architecture. So if you have like a really, kind of highly centralized team, then you end up with a highly centralized architecture. If you end up with like decentralized team, decentralized architecture. So, yeah. So
is this pretty new? Is this new or no? Cause I haven't heard of this yet.
No, I don't think so. I bet it's from the 70s or something.
I'll research it. Yeah. I'm interested because it started to remind me of like, I thought you were going to go like Peter Drucker, like where the internal mass scales like on the organization, but no, the Conway's law sounds really cool because like it's people that make the technology, right? Like as I interview all these awesome leaders like you, what happens is over and over, they end up saying how important and surprising it is that it's about the people. Like individual contributor, you're highly focused on like the task and the tactical technology. But as you like step back and look at the organization, you realize that whatever the people value, like those, they're producing a product that mirrors who they are as humans. And that's like really high level, heady type concept, but it's truthful.
Totally. Yeah. I would completely echo that, that is the single biggest kind of realization or learning that I've had over the course of the past 5 years is, going from basically being an individual contributor for about the first 10 years of my career, and just how important it is to be able to build strong relationships and build strong teams. Yeah.
So I'm really curious to know, because you just went through this, it's sort of fresh. You said you saw that you had your engineering teams and product and then they split, right? So now they're separate. Product and engineering are separate. Mm-hmm. How do you split? I'm sure there's someone listening that wants to know, like, at what point are you like, they're different and we split them, and how did you split them?
Yeah. So the initial split was pretty easy. We basically had, let me back up a second. So when we first got started, we didn't really need a dedicated product management team, mostly because we were dealing in a lot of our engineering team had kind of firsthand experience from past jobs of kind of the work that we were doing, either by working at a large medical record vendor or working at another kind of health tech startup or something to that effect. So we didn't, we had a strong kind of intuition on the team about, you know, we're building tools for developers. So we have a good user empathy already because we're making developer tools. And so for that reason, we got to kind of kick the can around down the road pretty far in terms of setting up a product management team. But about 3 years in or so, one person on our engineering team who was very kind of business savvy and very comfortable going in front of customers and was already sort of displaying a lot of those attributes, was really interested in kind of getting more into that space. And so he basically became our first kind of full-time product manager. And so he and I worked really closely together on building out roadmaps and things like, you know, the kind of typical product management activity. And then from there, I basically just, you know, he's basically kind of running the show in terms of bringing on new product owners, kind of developing the overall strategy for the team and things like that. So, you know, I would say if I, to kind of distill it down to the steps we took, it was mostly finding an engineer who was really kind of passionate about the product, passionate about speaking with customers and fairly business savvy. So could make some informed prioritization and, you know, could be sort of strategic about saying yes to which things and saying no to other things. And finding that person and kind of letting them run the show was important. I think if we didn't have him on the engineering team, we probably would have had to look outside and do that as a separate hire, but got super fortunate that we had somebody like that on the engineering team.
Nice. So you separated the product and engineering, and then that looks like product works with a lot of the customers and decides on the future roadmaps. And then that creates this pipeline for engineering to then devour.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So today we have 6 delivery teams. So these are your traditional Scrum, 2 pizza teams, whatever you choose to call them. and they have somewhere between 5 and 8 engineers, 1 product owner and 1 Scrum Master on each team. And so that's kind of the structure that we're using to go forward. And kind of as we hire in more engineers, we kind of grow one of those teams to about 10, then it goes through mitosis or whatever and forms into 2 teams. And we kind of go from there. So yeah, that's kind of the structure that we take today.
Now, do you have separate, actual fully separate products, or do you take like your API product and take features and make product teams out of like the most used features like areas?
Yeah, we try to base it around user groups effectively. Yeah. So we have one team that is because we're so kind of infrastructure based, some of our users are actually like services. Sometimes the robots are the users, but so we have one team that's focused on kind of system performance and just stability and resilience. We have one team that's really focused on developing tools for our own internal teams. So we're doing a lot of the customer success and the implementation standpoint. We have to connect up with all these different health systems, and they're all using very non-standard standards and, you know, FTPing us flat files of things, and we have to get that all into a consistent format. And so we have a lot of tools to allow our implementation engineers to be able to do that. And then, yeah, we have another group that's more focused on kind of the end user experience through our dashboard and through our website. Kind of the developer experience of API docs and developer tools and things like that.
Now I'm curious, and I'm turning this into like half a knowledge call for me. I'm thinking like if I've got these questions and I'm around this size, and there's going to be other people who have them.
For sure.
We'll include your advice in the book, and it'll be really awesome. Okay, so does at this stage of your company, do you have designers on each team? Like, how do you handle design quality within each product?
Yeah, so we're fortunate, perhaps, that our product is fairly backend intensive. I think if you were to look at our GitHub repos, you would see not very much CSS, I guess. Most of what we're designing would be more of an interaction with the API and like a developer experience, right? So if you don't have a required field, like how do we respond to you? How do we air that out? Those kinds of things. That's where we do a lot of design. From a visual standpoint, it's fairly functional based in terms of, you know, we have error logs, message logs, kind of standard analytics and set up your endpoint and security and things like that. But it's a fairly fairly functional oriented type design on the front end side of things. But in terms of how that design actually happens, from a technical standpoint, we do sort of I think it's fairly standard kind of design doc review process. So we have For any kind of major piece of development before we actually start doing the development, we'll put together a kind of full design doc. And we have the tech leads on each of the delivery teams meet up Tuesdays and Thursdays for an hour and a half to review any of the design docs that came up that week. So that's kind of a pretty, and one really important thing that we started doing, not from the beginning, we kind of learned that this was important, was that we started putting design doc authoring into like the story points for the Scrum. So a lot of people, you know, if it's not actual development, they don't actually count it towards their velocity and things like that, but it meant that the work was really not getting prioritized. So we started basically making like Jira cards for putting things into the sprint for actually working on the documentation.
Yeah, we ran into that issue with Pivotal. It's like certain things don't count and like right. They're priority, and so people aren't incentivized to complete them. And it's like, it's great to have them have a high preference or high structure in there, but at the same time, it's like we're working around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Best way possible. So you ever look at like companies like Stripe, because they're a company that had huge success with APIs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think some of our sort of like inspiration type companies, Stripe, Twilio, luckily our chief security officer came from Twilio, so we gotta have a little bit of an inside view there. So we get compared to Stripe a lot, but actually there's a company that's way more similar to us in the financial space called Plaid. And they're super cool. So whenever you like transfer money out of Coinbase or Robinhood or one of those into your bank account, they're the ones actually brokering that kind of transfer. And so they're similar to us in the sense that they're connecting up consumer facing applications with these institutional kind of on-prem style banks with, they're using kind of legacy and industry specific standards. So so those are some of the ones that I would say we get compared to kind of frequently.
Nice. Yeah. Cause I found Stripe like within the first couple months of it existing, right? Cause I was having this problem with, what was that? Authorized.net. Like it was just the worst thing in the world. And then someone's like, hey, check out Stripe. And so I followed them, and one of like my thoughts about why they were so successful is just personal, was they were super easy to use and get started, and they were beautiful. They like spent so much time on their documentation. It made it so easy for developers to learn with what they had. And so whenever I hear of like companies that are highly based on APIs, I'm mm-hmm. always like, oh dude, you guys making your stuff look beautiful like Stripe?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. There was definitely, you know, some early days where we definitely got some strong inspiration from a lot of their documentation on how we set up our stuff.
You sure. Got it. Did you, yeah. You just have to, it's like music, right? Like the next generation of music builds on the previous generation. Exactly. So you can't not build upon it. Like you have to, that's us doing our jobs. Right. So yeah. Who right now are you really looking for? Your company's growing, so you're definitely looking for different types of talent. I always like to give people a shout out for the type of talent that they're looking to attract. So like we know, we talked about your redoxiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we know like the style of people, but what type of hard skills are you looking for a lot right now?
Yeah. So you sort of asked before, and I didn't quite give you a straight answer on kind of, you know, do we have like multiple products or just like one product with multiple features. And we're at a point now where we're starting to look into, you know, product 2 and product 3 and starting to think about growing that way. So we are actually starting to, and some of those are going to be a little bit more user facing. We are actually looking for some more front end oriented folks, both kind of UI designers as well as more front end engineers. And then the other big area that I would say is, I guess two big areas. So on the kind of DevOps or infrastructure side, growing that team for sure. So we've, over the past year, we had kind of almost a 10x volume increase in terms of the number of transactions we were handling. And meanwhile, also had about a, I think it was a 6x improvement in kind of throughput and performance. So at any rate, we're doing a lot to stay in front of our growth from an infrastructure standpoint. So both from kind of the traditional DevOps working with our AWS environment, as well as CI/CD pipeline type teams, definitely trying to grow there, as well as we're about to spin up a new data science team, specifically focused on some really interesting problems that we are pretty uniquely positioned to solve based on kind of the network that we provide and the kind of data that we're transacting. So there's some really, really interesting and really fun problems to try to tackle from a machine learning and data science standpoint.
Nice. So is there anything else that you want to get out there into the world? To follow up on the people, the DevOps is growing, you're hiring some front end engineers, obviously continuous integration is important. And then you're looking to do a data science team. But if people are listening right now and they want to actually like take that step and reach out and like contact you or the team, how would they do that?
Yeah. So our website is redoxengine.com. So REDOXENGINE, redoxengine.com. And we have a careers page there. Feel free to apply there. You can also just find me on Twitter or LinkedIn or any of those. I'm sure we can post some of the social links and stuff like that. But and feel free to reach out or apply. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you.
And then for you personally, as we wrap up, I want to know, like, where's the first touch of technology like in your life? Like, was it a video game, computer? Like, when did you first start or a blender? When did you first start interacting with technology?
Yeah, so this is like even before I can remember, but my mom always would tell me that I just kind of chronically would disassemble things in the house and then like try to reassemble them with like whatever screwdriver I could find or anything like that. So I definitely had like an early interest in figuring out how things worked. And I think the first real kind of where I kind of felt the power of getting inside of some technology was pretty early on. I think it was 7 or 8 or something like that. I was playing a video game really early, like MS-DOS days, and realized like I could find the config file and could change my like guy's like strength from, you know, 10 to 100 and like destroy everybody or whatever. And I remember like that moment being like, oh yeah, you can just change anything. This is awesome. And so started getting really into, seeing what I could find and seeing what I could manipulate at that point. And, similarly, just trying to figure out how things worked and trying to get to an understanding of sort of how all the pieces fit together.
Were you able to get the things back together?
For the most part.
Most part. That's awesome. Yeah, I was really good at disassembling things. And then once I got my answer to, oh, that's how it works, I'd be like, all right, see you later.
Yeah, and now you have a broken toaster on your...
Exactly. I know. I once looked at taking apart a microwave and I thought, this could kill me. So that's where I drew the line. I was like, I won't do the microwave. Yeah. Oh man, this has really been fantastic hanging out and talking with you. What's like, and I'm just going to get one more question in here because it's just on my mind. If you're going to look back at the past 5 years and sort of consolidate everything to like one master takeaway, right? Like what's the big one? And there can be many, but what's the one that pops into your head right now?
Yeah. The thing that kind of comes to mind for me is is really kind of, I think a lot of people tell this story of, it was like three guys in a garage and then we just worked really hard and played some ping pong and then we IPO'd. And like the truth is, and there's actually a book called The Messy Middle sort of about this, but like the truth is like, there's a lot of ups and downs. And, it kind of all goes back to, the people that you're around and the mission that you're trying to serve. And I think without those, the ups and the downs feel the emotion of those. And, but being around people that are all interested in the same things and all, sort of oriented towards the same mission, makes those things just challenges or things to overcome rather than things that become kind of emotionally taxing. And so I think, you know, the biggest takeaway is just kind of focus, you know, have a really meaningful and impactful kind of 10-year vision and stay pointed there and kind of just deal with stuff as it comes up and surround yourself with people you enjoy being around. And yeah, I think the other thing that I also tell people who are trying to start new companies is if you get to be choosy, pick customers that you like being around too. Because if you're going to start a company, you're going to spend a lot of time talking to your customers. If you don't enjoy those people, it's going to make your job really hard. And luckily, we get to work with some really, really great people. So yeah, I think that's probably my big takeaway.
I like that last piece of advice, the customers, because I didn't realize how much time like you actually spend with the customers. Yeah. Like it's very important. And if you get the right, like I've had a couple customers and they've referred me to their board members and like, yeah. Just they're so nice and helpful. And I'm like, I don't know why. And like, we just like what you do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, well, cool. But it's like a weird feeling because I don't know. It feels good. I guess it provides like some validity. Like when people tell you that they're referring you to their friends over here because they just really like your API and it solves a problem. Like that feels really good, doesn't
yeah,
it?
For sure. Yeah. And we're very fortunate that we do get that happening quite a bit. And it's awesome that I think probably one of our single biggest pieces of referrals is actually from people's board members. You know, it looks like successful companies are all using Redux. Maybe you should too. And that kind of thing. And that's super awesome to see. And we have, I guess maybe I'll put in one plug here towards the fall here, we do a yearly interoperability summit is what we call it. So it's sort of half free conference to talk about healthcare industry stuff and half kind of user group meeting for us. And it's going to be in Boston and it's just a super cool community. We had it in Denver last year and had about 300 people there and just talked about healthcare technology, how to sell into health systems, how to build a resilient, scalable architecture in healthcare and kind of all the different kind of technical and non-technical tracks. And it's going to be fun. We had about, like I said, we had about 300 people there last year. Hoping for more this year. So
All right, man, dude, it was fantastic hanging out with you. Next time I'm in Denver or maybe in Boston, because I go there a lot to do different talks and things like that, I look forward to meeting you or saying hello or however our paths cross.
Yeah, for sure. This was a blast and thanks for having me on. And yeah, it was great to chat with you.
Fantastic, man. If you need anything at all, you just email me anytime. And then you and I, we will talk soon.
Sounds great.
See you, James.
Talk to you soon. Bye.